Welcome to another episode of Mick and Ori's Classic Cars. I'm Mick.
And I'm Ori.
Ori, we got Marcus back because I cut him short that last time we spoke about
Well, absolutely, Mick. I love the MG, as you know, and I didn't even know he owned one. So I said, we have to get him back. I want the car. And then I've seen some photos of the car. It's immaculate. Marcus, welcome back to the show.
Yeah,
welcome back, Marcus.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
And the MG is red, a red MG.
So have you always loved MGs? Tell us about MGs, because I feel that the MG people and owners are a cult into themselves.
Well, you know? No, I haven't always loved MGs at all, Ori. But you know what I love? What I do love is the layout. So you've got relatively lightweight, four-cylinder up front, floor shift transmission, and driven through the back wheels. And two doors.
So that's what you were looking for. That ticked the boxes.
Well, you know what? That formula, though, goes back to principally Lotus. So Lotus is one of the great exponents. Colin Chapman built some great cars, yep. and that particular formula he developed very well, because in particular the lightweight component. So he was able to get his cars very light because of the monocoque structure that he built into them. And then he had fiberglass panels on many of them as well. So you had the Lotus Elan is probably the greatest yep. exponent of that formula, very successful little race car, and really the Lotus motor as well, that ultimately the Lotus twin cam in the front of those was a nice, sweet little engine, reasonably good power. The MG hasn't got that, but it's got that same layout and formula. So it took on from that. And then it's been, you know, they started in mid-60s, whatever it was, the first MGs,
yep.
right through to, I think, the early 80s. So that formula for them worked exceptionally well and was very successful. And, of course, in that formula, then you had the Honda S2000, the Mazda MX-5 is the modern day.
How about the old Alpha Spiders of that era? They were that same layout, convertible, elongated floor yeah. shifter.
The Fiat 124 Spiders. Yep. There was a lot back then, yeah. you know, the competition.
So why did you pick British over Italian?
I would have preferred, you know, I'd like a Lotus Elan and still would like a Lotus Elan.
So that's what you were looking for, okay.
Any of those formulas, even the modern, it's not that modern, but it's been around a long time, but the MX-5 is another beautiful exponent of yeah. that formula. But the Italian cars are beautiful too, the Fiat's in that and the Alfa's in that, lovely.
So it's not that
cars.
You were looking for a classic, you were actually looking for that.
Yeah,
layout.
Yeah, it's very compact, very, you know, it doesn't take up too much space, it's lovely, it's still a lovely little car to drive, and I've heard you guys talk about, you know, power and performance yeah. versus the actual driving pleasure. The MG is a beautiful little car yeah. to drive. You sit down low in it, you're very close to the ground, it's you know, you drop the roof off it. I don't think I've never driven this one in the rain, so I've always had it with the roof off yeah. when I drive it. The gears are lovely to use, and it goes through the gears and the revs very smoothly, lovely.
It's not necessarily about full performance, is it?
Absolutely
not. It's the driving pleasure. I mean, I've never driven an MG. Have you driven an MG, Ori?
I've driven the modern ones. I haven't driven the... Remember when MG... So once that shape finished, then MG actually went away. You couldn't buy them. And then when they relaunched with... It was a completely different yeah. shape. Back in Australia, I drove one of those earlier MGs when they came back. They came back with, if you recall, was an MG and a Rover dealer at the same time. You could buy Rovers and MGs. So I drove those cars. I think they were made in the same factory, to be honest. But then I was lucky enough to drive a friend of mine's MG. And it's a beautiful little car to drive, 100%.
Yeah,
yeah. I actually, to be honest, enjoyed it more than the Alpha Spider. If I'm allowed to say that.
Well,
but I would never say that.
Not sure you are, am I?
Yeah, I know. I don't know if I'm legally allowed to say that.
Engine size, what is it? The one you've got?
1.8.
Now, did they ever do 2 litres? I know they went to a V8. They did a V8 for MGB, V8, GT or whatever it was.
Yeah, well, they did an MGC, which is mostly, I think they're all 6-cylinder. And they're lovely little cars. And yeah, they're just a little 4-cylinder, I think, 1.6, 1.8. They were probably the two variants. Don't quote me on that. But
so where did you find this one?
Yeah, this was being sold off. So the guy I got it from in Adelaide, he had imported it from America. So yeah. it came from Arizona, so the story goes. The benefit of coming from Arizona is very dry, so there's no rust in it.
Left-hand drive?
It was left-hand drive when it arrived here, and he had it converted. This was 20 years ago.
Okay.
So he had it converted and fully restored and 20 years ago, and he's hardly driven it, and I've hardly driven it, and that's where it is. And it's because America's got triple wipers, so it's got three wipers on the windscreen, because when the MGs were sent to America, the government rules said, well, you're not, your wiper blades aren't covering enough of the windscreen. So they put in a third.
I tell you, those American rules.
They do.
Extra large indicators, because I think most of the people must be blind.
So it's got the three wipers. They work really well too. So they're funny to watch the three of them going backwards and forwards.
I hadn't driven
in the rain, so I actually haven't used them that much, but I've seen
They have to. They've got three wipers. I'm just looking at the photo now.
So if they've got the bigger bumpers as well?
No, not mine. It's 1971, my version. But they put the bigger bumpers on.
But those indicators at the front, are they the Americanized indicators down the front?
I think they're the original ones, yeah. Okay. They're not
big. Wouldn't have been the American ones, Ori, because the American ones were the side indicators.
Well, there's no side indicators.
Yeah,
there.
Well, that means in 71, the Americans, because that's the same with the Dino, the 74 Dino.
But when it
was the later ones, they made the side indicators.
Okay. And they brought out the rubber noses on the MGs, which look, in my opinion, really bad.
Yeah, I don't like them at all.
Yeah, no.
And then the cars got heavier and heavier as more emissions, and as many cars did in those days, and yeah, they went downhill, many people might say. But 1971 was a nice model, yeah.
So when you bought this one, were you actually looking for it, or is it just come across?
No, not looking for it. It was just a good value buy. It was a good car. I love the layout, as I said. I like that formula, and it was in really good nick, and the price was very reasonable. So, and the guy was really good that sold it, and he could see that it was. Sometimes, as you would know,
to an enthusiast.
If you're selling it to someone that you know is appreciating it, you're happy to. And I keep in touch with him a little bit, send him updates on what's happening.
Well, I think he can keep in touch. He can keep in touch. You've got an Instagram page for the car.
Yeah.
Can I call out the Instagram page, mate?
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, if you want to look at the car, it's Red MG71. And if you look at the photos, it's a true enthusiast. But I think my car needs an Instagram page.
Well, just about. You talk about it enough.
Well, the Pagoda's got one, our mate. The Pagoda's got one. Absolutely beautiful, that Pagoda. And this is just gorgeous. And he just goes to show you just, you know, what you do with a car is fantastic. So how often would you drive this MG?
Again, only when it's warm, because I don't put the roof on, and only when it's not raining. So, you know, over summer and spring and that sort of thing, get it out, you know, a couple of times a month. I like to get it up in the hills and get some photos with the autumn leaves and that sort of thing at the moment. But I had to put a new brake master cylinder in, because
– You did that yourself, did you?
Yeah.
So you do all the work on it yourself?
Yeah, again, it's a very simple car.
I love that.
I don't do the bottom end.
Yeah.
But it doesn't need any work there. But it's a very simple car, although sometimes accessing things – the hardest thing sometimes is getting access to screws and things, the way the British put things together. But
yep. It's not only the British.
Oh, and the Italians, of course. So – put that in, and it was a bit of fiddling about. It was in a rush to get that done, because the brakes failed somehow. Luckily, I wasn't going fast, but the brakes died, and the seal in the master cylinder went. And again, arguably that's because I don't drive it enough. So if you don't keep the rubber parts operating,
lubricated, yep.
Then you know they can get dry and they can crack.
So how long have you owned the car?
2 years.
So how many kilometres would you have done in those 2 years?
I'm just guessing, you know, 1,000 k's or something. I only drive around the hills.
Not much at all. It's
okay. What about in terms of, you know, you talked about the master cylinder and fixing up the brakes. Do you get the source of parts locally, or what happens with those things?
Yeah, well, there's lots of MG parts. Like MG parts are reasonably easy to get, particularly in America and England. So the most efficient way for me to get a new master cylinder, as it turned out, was to order it from America. It cost me $180, $150 landed, something like that, which was just pretty good. And then I just did the rest myself. I took it to a mechanic after I finished to
check it all,
make sure the brakes were done properly and bled properly, etc. And the same with the master cylinder. You got to bench bleed the master cylinder. So apparently it was all pretty good. There's a couple. I can't remember the name of the company I got mine from in America, but they're pretty big and they supply worldwide. And they make replicas. There's so many MGs out there that there's a big market for the second-hand parts. So in America and England you can get them. There's good suppliers in Australia too, but just not as readily available as they are overseas.
You're part of the MG Club?
Yeah, member of the MG Club. Don't sort of interact with them too much, although just recently, not too long ago in Adelaide, they held the national convention or the national meet for MGs down at – well, it was a long weekend, and I went down and had a look at the cars at the Collie Reserve at Glenelg. Yeah, and beautiful cars. Just put some of those up on the Instagram. I don't generally only put my car on the Instagram because there are some nice ones on there. I put a few of those up as well, and because they're just beautiful examples. And guys, people are driven from all over Australia and taking their time to drive over across the country.
I'd say, I love seeing the MG Club out on the road because there's that many MGs that participate in a drive day. They just look fantastic. You know,
I was thinking with the MG. I mean, because
you would rather than it was British Racing Green.
No, not really. Oh. No, a red MG, I think it is appropriate, but I do like the British Racing Green in an MG.
Isn't it Get Smart?
Well, yeah, that's right, in the Get Smart.
Particularly if it's got the bone or the upholstery is in that nice leather. But the, just as an aside, because you'll like this, the MG that I've got, the red MG, the colour, and I believe this is correct, its official colour that it's painted in is Monza Red.
Monza Red, yeah. So and that is an MG colour?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I think it's from an earlier model in the 60s, so when it was rebuilt, it was resprayed in this Monza Red.
Was it red from the original, though?
I think it was, but...
But just a different shade of red,
yeah. But this red's is beautiful. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems like, Marcus, you've bought this 3 years ago, but in terms of maintenance or doing anything, you've done hardly anything to it apart from the brakes.
Just servicing, yeah.
Yeah. What about things like tyres? Were the tyres old?
The tyres were in pretty good nick, yeah, and it's got lovely spoke wheels.
Yeah, those spokes look amazing.
We do like the – yeah, well, we call them
the – How hard are they to keep – but to keep clean, those spokes must be – it must be difficult.
It is. I'm not too fussy. If I wanted to make it really nice, I'd sit down and
get in,
you know,
get
into the wheels. But they're still good, and I do clean them. But you know, I don't spend ages there. You could,
yeah.
Now, before the MG, on the same type of cars, you had an MX-5 for a while. But was that with your son Samuel?
Oh yeah, he did too. He had an MX-5, yeah. And again, that was a first model. I forget what it's called now. The first model of those, relatively simple car, same layout, same formula, easy to work on, easy to modify. So he played around with it and modified it, and it was great. It was a great little car, but he moved it on and got something else. You know, like I did when I was a kid, I suppose. But yeah, great formula.
I think, yeah, have you ever driven an MX-5?
No, I haven't even driven an MX-5.
For me, the best of the MXs. The 5, the first one that came out, is so much better than the 7, the 8. Excellent.
Yeah, but one of the later models actually went back to sort of inverted commas the original formula.
Yeah.
So they tried to make it smaller.
It was a beautiful,
again.
Nifty little car. Yeah. It was great to drive.
Well, they had a racing series with them all over the world.
Yeah.
And the other car, you know, and I've heard you guys talk about this, and I've heard you guys start to warm a little bit towards the brand, is Lotus. You know, Lotus.
Lotus, fantastic.
So made the Elise, which is the same formula.
Love the Elise.
And absolutely sensational.
Yeah, well, I like the Exige. The V6 Exige supercharged.
But that shape, I love that shape. And now the new Evira, is it?
The new Emira.
Emira. Yeah. Oh, God, that looks unbelievable.
You know what? To me, it does look good. But I think it's going away from the Lotus a little bit.
Well, that's
because
it's
starting to look like a smaller McLaren or a smaller Ferrari or a smaller, you know, that's how I feel. It doesn't exactly. But
I think there's a lot of new technology. I won't say too much technology, but there's a lot more technology in those cars than in these early ones. Because MG would be analog as.
Oh, yeah, you know? Absolutely. It's and that's a beautiful thing about it too.
It's got a radio, I suppose.
It's the owner that put a cassette player in it, which
there
is, I've still got my cassette collection. And hopefully.
And it still works?
It still works, yeah. So we drive around and put old cassettes in them until it chews them up and spits them out. It's a laugh.
Yeah. What were you going to say? Sorry, I'll cut you off.
No, I was just going to say with the Lotus, with the Emira. So that's a bit of a turning point car in the history of motoring, because I think Lotus is a tremendously well established, famous and successful brand, and it's had its ups and downs. But the Emira is the last, I believe, of their petrol cars, their internal combustion engine. So, you know, as terms of a driver's car, it's right up there as far as I'm concerned with any other of the great brands in the world, and it's the end of the line for for that particular version of their cars.
I think it's one to buy too.
I really do, and it's a relatively good buy. What is it in Australia? 220-250 grand, I think.
Well, I've seen them a little bit cheaper, about 180. Yeah, I thought they were about 180 starting.
I think the 180 was the original listed price.
Okay.
But for some reason that they went up a little bit, and it's probably gone up with demand as well.
Yep.
And why they're hard to get.
And while you're looking, Ori, they don't come in manual anymore, though.
Yes, they do. Get two options. There's a manual.
So is it the four-cylinder that's a manual? Or?
Yeah, because there's two engines that it comes out with. Yeah, I can't remember if it's the Mercedes engine or the Toyota engine. One of them comes with manual, one comes with the – see, I think the Mercedes is with the auto.
I'd be interested to drive that, but I must admit, having driven the Exige, the V6 to, you know, V6 supercharged Exige, I thought that was bang for your buck, you know,
well, unbelievable. It'd be interesting to get your opinion if you've driven a 4C, Alfa Romeo 4C.
I've driven a 4C. Yeah.
A 4C versus a Lotus Elise or Exige.
Well, that'd be interesting. I prefer the Lotus Exige.
Easily over the 4C.
Over the 4C. Right. Yep.
Why?
That's not fair, though. That's not fair because we had the Lotus Exige V6, whereas the 4C is only the 1750 four-cylinder.
Is it lack of power that you don't like?
Oh, it's a lack of power. It's lack of noise. It's lack of a manual. The Exige was a manual.
Yeah, this was
the
paddle.
4C is paddle.
The 4C was fun to drive, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But if you said which one would you want to own and have more fun, the Exige, for me, the Lotus every day of the week.
Yep. Now, if there was the Exige in the four-cylinder, which I didn't drive, and it was flappy paddle or not auto, then it would be one to compare with the 4C. Yeah. But the V6 Exige, I thought it was just, you know, unbelievable.
Well, it's like go-kart, which you've got experience.
No power steering. It was really good.
The only thing... They are hard to get in and out of.
Well, we did learn that. No, but we learned how to get in. You actually put the seat back.
But Marcus is quite a tall gentleman.
I'll tell you a quick side story on that one, Ori. I put a $500 deposit down on a Lotus.
Elise.
Older James Bond.
Evora.
Esprit.
I put a $500 down on a Esprit, which was the four cylinder turbo.
That's the wedgie-like one.
Yeah, the wedgie, the Bertone design.
And the James Bond one.
If you look at the performance figures of that car against a Ferrari of that era, the Lotus is better numbers. It was a 4.2 to 100. Absolutely sensational car.
4.2 to 100 back then.
Yeah.
That's pretty quick.
And what was the Ferrari in those days?
That would have been 6.
That was your car.
That's what I mean. It would have been 6.
A 308.
6.2 or something.
I remember looking
at it. What year is the Esprit, the one you're talking about?
70s.
It's in the 70s.
Mid-70s maybe.
No, it wouldn't have been 4.2.
Why are you getting upset for?
Can you look it up? I am upset.
We'll Google that.
I'm pretty sure on that because I looked at it and thought, wow, this is pretty good. Need a little bit of attention, fiberglass body, some little bits of cracks and things in it. But I ended up passing on it. But the reason I did, because coming back to your point, Ori, I couldn't fit in it. I'm not that tall. I'm a bit taller, but
taller than us.
But I'm also tall in the torso. So when you sit in it, my head was touching on the roof, which I feel claustrophobic when that happens.
Yep.
Very narrow.
And you can't wear a hat.
Very narrow footwell. So you really, unless you've got racing shoes on just about every day, it's very difficult to drive. There's no room between the pedals, and my feet are not the smallest again. And so I passed on it for that reason. But, gee, it was a good deal at the time for
I'd be interested to see what the performance figures
are. We can look that up, relax. But I'd be hesitant to say that in the MG with the roof on, your head would hit the roof.
Yeah, well, possibly. You're possibly right, but the canvas, first of all, it's canvas, so it's not.
So you see a little bulge if I'm looking from outside because that's you.
But the seats are set very low on the floor. Okay. You're virtually sitting on the floor.
A lower sitting position. Yeah.
So your adjustment with your legs and arm distances and everything, it's quite comfortable.
Oh, beautiful. MG's comfortable. It's very comfortable.
But it's easier to, and back to my point, what I was trying to get to, it's a lot easier to get into. So I would have bought that definitely over the Lotus in your case. To get in and out.
No, but he'd just hop over the door, wouldn't you? Don't you just jump over the door?
It's not the Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Sorry.
And the other Lotus too that I had the good fortune to drive was a Type 63, which is built in 1963, but just happened to be Type 63, which is a sports car.
That's the open wheeler?
A Le Mans sports car.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So again, same layout, but this rear engine four cylinder, super. I think it was 650 kilograms or something like that. Very lightweight, And so much fun. I had a chance to drive it around the track at the Adelaide 500 years and years ago, but also the Melbourne Grand Prix too. So
okay, and you had no problems getting in and out of that one?
No, but no, it was no problems. But the funny thing on that one, it had a roll bar on it because I'm a bit taller again in the torso. My head was above the roll bar. So you wouldn't actually want to roll it.
So that means you probably couldn't you would have had a helmet on, I suppose, if you're on the track.
Stuck up above the head, the roll bar again. But it was a demonstration run, so we were allowed to get away with it, I suppose.
Okay. And so going back to the MG, you use that every now and then. Is there any particular thing you really do like doing in it? Is it the hills drive?
It's around a corner. Yeah, it's lovely to drive through the hills because you get lots of gear changes too, and it's a really sweet little gearbox to use. And so we have a lot of fun when we take that out. Yeah, go in the hills, go for a drive.
I want to go through the hills with it. But it's not a spirited drive in any sense. It's just a casual, enjoyable drive.
It keeps you occupied. What's the word? You know, it's engaging.
You're focusing. You're driving the car. But you're hearing every little nook and cranny.
You're not just sitting there and letting everything do it automatically. You've got to be mindful of the speed around the bend and what gear you're in and your revs, like a driver's car. It's not fast.
Is it four speed or five?
It's four with electric overdrive.
You've got a button that takes
the revs. So when you're top of fourth,
you drop the revs.
You click the button, or even any gear, you click the button?
Third and fourth.
So at third, you click it?
It's just on the dash, the rocker switch on the dash.
All right.
So you're just going along, you're just driving, you just flick it.
And then the
revs drop and you can see it drop down. Yeah.
Okay.
You do that if you're cruising at just 80, 90 k's an hour, you flick that, just the revs drop. That's all. That's all that happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you don't get any more speed from it or anything?
No, and to be honest with you, I don't know exactly how it works, but
it's better fuel consumption because less revs.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, just poddle along, eh?
Anyway, we're going to take your car for a drive one day.
That's the rules.
That is the rules. Actually, this is unusual because I didn't think we were going to be talking about this. So we haven't driven it because normally we like to drive them first. But anyway, we'll find out.
Well, it'll be your first time in an MG.
Driving an MG.
Have you ever been in one?
I don't think I've even been in one.
Yeah. You're very anti the British cars, I think.
No, not really. No, I do like the Mini and the Mini Cooper and the Mini Cooper S, of course. Anyway, we're going to leave it there, Marcus. Thanks again for coming in.
Thanks, guys.
Again, you can catch us on the show at mickandori@gmail.com and, of course, our Instagram page and YouTube, of course. But we're going to leave it there. And remember, if your car's not a classic,
it will be one day.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.